Disney reports earnings after the close, and one of the most fascinating aspects of the U.S. media business, or global media business, is how a lot of these traditional media companies are trying to pivot to more technology-driven streaming companies, trying to get that valuation from Netflix. And there's one banker out there who's making it all happen for the technology side of the media business, and that's Terry Kwaja, founder and CEO of Luma Partners Investment Banking, based here in New York. I used to work with Terry back in the day at Salomon Brothers and First Boston when he was putting all the traditional media companies together back in the day. Now he's kind of working with the new wave of technology-driven media companies. So, Terry, thanks so much for joining us here in our Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studio. So, again, let's start with a company like a Disney. These companies are really trying to transform themselves from the old model based upon advertising and subscription revenue to streaming. Can they do it?
Yeah, great to be with you, Paul and Lisa. So here we are in the middle of what is one of the largest industries, right? There's over $100 billion of advertising and probably another $150 billion in paid dollars that support the sort of TV slash, you know, video media channel. And all of a sudden, these massive companies with enormous market caps, you know the names, Comcast, Disney, Charter, et cetera, all have a crisis, a beyond existential crisis, as they effectively have to swap out their engines while keeping the plane in the air, right? They got to support those market caps with a fundamental change, not only in the technology of the delivery of their media and advertising, but also the channel in which consumers have chosen to consume their content.
Right. So the idea being that they are moving online. And the question is, with something like what Disney is doing so far, they've been rewarded more than other companies for investing, even though it's not going to make money. How long can that continue at a time when there are big questions about how much subscribers are willing to pay and how many services they're willing to subscribe to?
So, look, Lisa, I think this is early days. So I think all the people looking at the immediate subscriber, new subscribers and the subscriber churn numbers of, say, Disney's Disney Plus app, I think it's way too early to be looking at that. I don't think we're there in terms of, you know, the value proposition. There are still content that hasn't gone exclusive onto Disney, so there still is some, you know, distribution rights on other platforms. We can't fully judge it yet. And let's face it, we're still in the early days where they're providing subscription cross promotions. It's kind of free, right? You know, if you buy an iPhone, you get Apple TV. If you, you know, Disney has cross promotions with Verizon. So we're in the early fanfare days of streaming, the streaming wars. In fact, you know, we're at the peak of the streaming wars, and we will be at the peak for the rest of the year. Think about it. When large companies have an existential threat and a rationale to get a consumer product out, they market the bejesus out of it. Just remember, last fall when
yes,
Disney Plus was announced and Apple TV was announced, and this year we've got NBC with Peacock, we have HBO, AT&T with HBO Max, and we've got Quibi. So we are going to be in peak streaming wars all through 2020 and beyond.
So, Terry, you spent a lot of time with the advertising technology companies, companies that make the digital advertising marketplace work. They interact. Obviously, that's really the engines of the big advertising giants like Google, like Facebook, like Amazon. Do you expect the technology companies, those big technology companies that have all that cash, all that free cash flow, to maybe get into the media business itself, into the content business in a bigger way?
Well, I believe they're going to play a major role. And listen, if you set this up as inevitably it is, a dichotomy, a war, where it is called streaming wars after all, right? It's a war, not even just amongst the streaming choices, but between big media and big tech. And big tech has four major advantages. They've got, as you mentioned, market cap and cash on the balance sheet up the wazoo. They vastly outscale the big media companies, and the big media companies are trying to catch up by doing all these, you know, traditional mergers just to garner enough scale. But even still, they do not compare to big tech. Second is they've got UI down pat. I mean, your user experience on Apple products or on Netflix is just so much different than your average cable company, even the more advanced ones like Comcast X1. It just doesn't compare. They've got those kind of chops. So there are just so many elements why big tech, and by the way, they have the technology at their core. They were born digital. So the big media companies, and this is the part where I put up my hand and say thank you very much, need technology. It's not technology native to them. They have to be able to avail their content across the channels that consumers want, which is OTT and digital. And to do that, right, there's so much complication. There's a Lumascape, which is a diagram of all the players in the space, you know, because let's think about it, right? Across all these channels of linear, addressable, OTT, and digital, I'm getting a headache just talking about it. You know, there's different parameters in identifying who a person is. There's different technologies to deliver the ads. Yeah. It is just a whole bunch of conflation that needs to be sorted out.
Terry, I'm struck by your expertise being absolutely perfect on a day like today for a variety of reasons. You specialize in coming up with valuations of what companies may become and as they become the future. And I would love to get your perspective on Tesla, because right now nobody can justify the valuation based on current fact. How does one go about understanding value at a time of transformation in a company that harbors at least a dream, if not a reality?
So what you're referring to, Lisa, is the complex art of valuing innovation. And I call it art because for most mature companies with demonstrable financials and revenue and cash flow that we can all analyze and compare to other similar companies, most of the valuation work we do on those kind of companies, I would refer to, put it in the category of science. Right? There's science of it's math, it's comparables, and plus or minus, you know, 10, 20%, you're kind of going to get it right or right-ish. When you start talking about the kind of companies that actually that I deal with that, you know, get sold for like 20 times revenue, and people say to me, why did so-and-so pay 20 times revenue for that business? And my answer is because they didn't. 20 times revenue, it's not as though they did it as a multiplier to get to the valuation. We started with what is this worth to you, figure out the valuation, and then it's division to find out what the multiple was. So when you look at a company like Tesla, yeah. I mean, it's basically the future. How do you value the future? I mean, if you were to ask people, you know, rational people, you know, are we moving towards an electronic future? The answer is yes. So it's just hard to nail down. It's not science.
Terry Khawaja, we've got to have you back and talk about...
He needs more energy, I think, about talking about this topic.
I honestly, it's such a pleasure having you from every perspective. Terry Khawaja, founder and chief executive officer of Luma Partners Investment Banking in New York, talking about the intersection of big tech, big media, and big dreams.